We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 203. Merry Christmas, everyone. You're listening to this podcast on Monday or maybe Tuesday, because let's be honest, maybe people are spending their day with their families on Christmas. I don't know. I've heard that's a thing, Scott. But also, happy Hanukkah to everyone who just finished celebrating Hanukkah, like myself. Scott, how's it going?
It's good, man. Christmas is a... I can't believe it got here already. It's like this entire year just absolutely flew by. Happy Hanukkah to you. I know that you're also going to be celebrating some Christmas back in my old stomping grounds with your girlfriend and her family as well. So little Ridgewood, New Jersey shout out. You're going to be heading back to Dirty Jers.
I am. Yep, right after we finish this podcast. Can't wait.
Nice, man. Yeah, dude, this is going to be an interesting Christmas for us. I know a lot of people have been actually asking and sending me messages, and man, it's truly humbling when you're doing the show and you're talking to when I'm talking to you about Yankees, and I know a lot of people are listening, but when they reach out to you and start talking to you about personal things like my son, for those of you who don't know, I'm up in Boston with my wife and my son. We're at Boston Children's Hospital, where my son has just gone undergone his second heart surgery. He's doing well. He's recovering right now in the ICU, and you know, we're super happy about it. He's kind of going through just a couple little electrical issues, if you will, with the heart. So we're hoping those will pass in the next few days, and we can get the heck out of here and go back home. So that's something. But again, I really want to just thank everybody for reaching out and just saying so many nice things. It's really awesome. It's truly like a Yankee family. It really is. I mean, this is kind of my therapy, going through all this stuff, and I love doing it because it kind of gets my mind off things, and I get to talk Yankee baseball, which has been, you know, a passion of mine my entire life. But I wanted to say something as well, just quickly on this note, because I know people have been following Kemp's journey as well. One of the places that we do stay every time we've come to Boston, we've stayed in an apartment run by the Ethan Lindbergh Foundation. And I know when everybody's home for Christmas and you guys are doing all whatever you're doing with the family, I know we talk about a number of things, and it might be a really cool opportunity for anybody who's interested in following this a little bit closer to support basically the community of children's heart defects, because it's a very massive community. You don't realize how big it is until you're actually in it. I didn't even know really that it existed until I was there. But it's a very large, loving, open arm community. So I wanted to throw out the foundation that sets up the apartment housing up in Boston, in case anybody is interested in supporting them in any way. But it's called the Ethan Lindbergh Foundation, and the website is ethanlindbergh.com. And if you go on there, even as small of a donation you want, if you want to support this in any way, I would truly appreciate it. If you do, take a screenshot and shoot me an email or tweet me, and I'll retweet it from Bronx Pinstripes. But it'd be pretty cool to get, you know, just a small little donation drive going for these guys. They do some amazing research in Boston for children's heart defects. They work with the Children's Hospital, and they do a number of things. And honestly, the research that they do and that they support has led to developments that are basically keeping my son, for all intents and purposes, they're keeping him going right now. They're doing, and they're going to be basically that research keeps him and gives him a very positive long-term outlook. So it's important to me. It's important to obviously everybody who's involved. So again, it's ethanlindbergh.com. You can make a donation on there. Definitely shoot me a screenshot. But it would be awesome for a bunch of Yankees fans to go out there, and even if it's a couple bucks, to support a local Boston charity. I think that would be very apropos.
You mentioned something at the start where you said you get a ton of messages from fans of the podcast, listeners of the podcast, people who read the website, and I see them too, because we share the Twitter accounts, and it's just so awesome to see the listeners of this podcast, you know, so active and so interested in Kemp's story. So just as me, your co-host, mm-hmm. That's awesome to see as well.
Yeah, we're, I mean, you know, it's, we do this show every week. We talk Yankees. we do all Yankees baseball. But everybody, you know, some people have been listening to us for 3 years. I'm sorry that you've had to hear my voice for 3 years, but some of us have been listening to us for 3 years, and we've met a bunch of these guys at events and things like that. And, you know, when you meet people and you know they're listening and they meet you, it's just it's a cool connection there. So there's definitely a strong community that has grown and is growing around this. And the fact that you guys are, you know, taking a vested interest in my family's personal life and things like that, it means the world to me because it's happening. I mean, I can't tell you it's not happening because it is, it's happening. And we're going through this and my guy is just, he's kicking ass. He really is. We have a very positive outlook on everything. And we're just, you know, we're embracing this whole thing as just another challenge and another fight. And Kemp's kicking some butt. So we call him Kemp the Warrior. That's exactly what he's doing. He's battling on. So yeah, if you could make a donation, again, it would just be amazing. If you don't, that's fine too. But definitely screenshot it or do something. Shoot it to me and I'll retweet it from even the Bronx Pinstripes account and see if we can't get something cool going.
And speaking of that community, the BP crew, we have some 2018 dates. We got an email from someone who is interested in coming to some of the games that we've talked about. We have 6 dates set up for you guys next year, where we did 2 of them last year. We did the one on June 10th. It was awesome. It was the game that Judge demolished the Orioles pitching. We were out at Billy's pregame, and then we did one in September. It was the last weekend of the season. We did a pregame at the Bronx Brewery. So we actually have 6 dates coming up in 2018. The first one is April 7th versus Baltimore. It's a Saturday. It's a 1 o'clock game. The next one is May 26th versus the Angels. That's a Saturday night game. And maybe Otani, if his elbow is still put together, might be on the mound. Who knows? The next one's June 29th versus Boston. That's a Friday night game. July 28th versus KC is a Saturday game. We don't know the time yet. August 11th versus Texas is a Saturday game. And then finally, September 15th versus Toronto, Saturday game. So we've got five Saturday games and a Friday game. So we have 7 events, actually.
You still can't count. There's six total. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
5 plus 1 is 6.
And you didn't number them. You got to number them in the notes there, buddy.
Then, so just so everybody knows about these events too, we're going to be doing a t-shirt around them, just like we did the first two, some sort of an event, whether it's a pregame, around them, postgame, something along that line around these games. And the, what I'm doing, I'm going to be putting together packages as well. So they'll be individually priced. We're going to get these games out before you can even buy regular season individual game tickets. I think those go out in February at some point. I'm talking to the Yankees tickets guys, but we're going to have these out ahead of that. So you'll be able to buy Yankees tickets before anybody else could buy Yankees tickets, which is awesome. And I'm going to put together a package that has a season package too. So anybody who wants to come to all these games and is looking to go to 6 Yankees games, come to these games. They're going to be fun. We're going to be in the same section, section 205, 206, a lot closer to the front of the section as well. We're going to be blocked a lot more densely together as well, which I'm very excited about. But the Yankees have basically dubbed that section as our section. We can grow it as large as we want, which is awesome. So definitely tell your friends, tell your family, get on board with these events. The dates, we'll put them in the show notes as well. And then you can't buy tickets yet because I have to put together the package, but I am going to put together like a discounted season package as well, if you're interested in that. And I'll throw some other cool perks in there. So keep an eye out for that, you know, around the beginning of the year at some point when I can get my ass in gear in January, and we'll have that, but I'm pumped up. That's going to be exciting. That is exciting. It's going to be fun, and we'll definitely be building more onto that community. The BP crew is going to be loud in right field.
And those dates are set in stone. So if you need to book travel, you can be sure that those dates are not going to change.
Oh, that makes me nervous. But no, they're set in stone, but that makes me nervous.
Final bit of housekeeping news that we've got for you guys as this week of Christmas to New Year's. I know a lot of people have the week off. My office is closed, which is awesome. I'm looking forward to some time off. We did a lot of player podcasts where we talked to guys like Clint Frazier, Tyler Wade, last season. And we talked to some guys who are no longer on the team as well. Pour one out for your boy Ref Snyder and Blake Rutherford. But for the guys who are still in the Yankees organization, we're going to put those interviews out again this week as you guys are listening to this. So we've got Clint Frazier, Tyler Wade, Ben Heller, Justice Sheffield, Chance Adams, and Clark Schmidt. Some people might be saying, who the hell is Clark Schmidt? He's the guy that the Yankees drafted in the first round last year. We got him like the day after he was drafted. So all those interviews are going to be out this week. Some of them were long, like Frazier gave us a full hour. Some of them are on the shorter side. I remember Justice, he was on the bus, right, in AA.
He was on the bus going to wherever they were playing next. So that was something that we've been toying around with. I need to shoot another email to my contacts over in AA and AAA to see if we can't get the bus interview thing going. I think that's got legs. I think that's a good segment we should do.
It's a good segment, although the sound quality might be lacking on some of them.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. There's the bus sound quality, not the greatest.
And also, if you guys missed it on the last episode at the very end of the show, there was a quick conversation I had with Jabari Blash, who the Yankees just acquired from San Diego. So you can go back and listen to that as well. Okay, let's get into some Yankees topics here. The big rumor going on right now is Gerrit Cole. And I got a little something for you. Do you think the Yankees are going to get Gerrit Cole in their stocking this Christmas?
Oh, the Cole thing. Yeah, I am not there mentally. I got that way afterwards.
Took you far too long.
Yeah, it did. Now I'm wondering if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because getting Cole in your stocking is not a good thing. And you know, if it is the package that the Pirates are looking for, then I also agree it's not a good thing. It's this Gerrit Cole thing is confusing to me. I think it's one of those deals where you're looking at, the Yankees have all the strength right now. They're 100% in the driver's seat. They don't need Gerrit Cole. He's a luxury at this point. They have five starters. They have five established starters, the ones that were there last year that they ended the season with. So they don't need him. He'd be a nice shiny toy I think he's controlled through at the end of 2019, if I'm correct. He's similar to Sonny Gray, right?
Yeah, let me look. I think it's
a similar contract. Anyway, he is controlled. He's a big name. Yankees had him at one point. He dissed the Yankees, went to UCLA. So the Yankees obviously want him back. They've been looking at him for a long time. They tried to bring him into the organization a while ago before he went to college. So all that being said, Gerrit Cole, the pitcher, you know, does he excite me? I guess the potential of Gerrit Cole excites me, but how long are we going to be talking about his potential?
He's a free agent in 2020. So you're right. He is, in arbitration through the 2019 season. You nailed it where you said the Yankees are at a position of strength because of the five starters that they have. I don't know about you, but I am extremely comfortable going into the season next year with Tanaka, Severino, Sonny Gray, Jordan Montgomery, and CC Sabathia. Do I think that all five of those guys are going to make it through the season, each pitching 30 times, no injuries, everything's going to be hunky-dory? Hell no. There's going to be injuries. But they also have Chad Green, who they think is going to go into the spring training as a starter, Chance Adams, number of these different depth guys that they can plug in if a guy goes down. Now, if Severino blows out an elbow and he's out for the season, well, then that completely changes things. But you can't assume something like that is going to happen. You can assume there's going to be minor injuries where a guy, especially like CeCe's, got some knee issues. But they have five starters, and barring a six-man rotation, which we have an email about later in the show, or barring like Jordan Montgomery getting dealt, I just don't see why the Yankees would push on Gerrit Cole, where they would be giving up guys like Clint Frazier and or Adams is sort of like the package that I've heard the Yankees want to have, but the Pirates are still holding out for Gleyber Torres, which I think Cashman is hanging up the phone on them as soon as they say the name Gleyber Torres, because I don't think there's any way they trade him. So I think the Yankees can say, we've got five starters. Your price is either going to come down or we're moving on.
Yeah, I just thought there's a couple, two sides of this I don't really understand. One, if the Pirates are asking for the world and they're not getting the world, then why are they getting rid of this guy? His value is only going to increase, unless there's an injury, but his value is only going to increase as the season goes on towards the trade deadline. We've seen the hauls that happen at the trade deadline when we got for Andrew Miller. I mean, it's a coincidence that the same name, Clint Frazier, would be the centerpiece of this, but it seems like even for where the Yankees are standing, like that second deal, the one that's reportedly they're comfortable with, to me is a very large package for a guy like Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
That's three guys that can contribute on the major league level. Clint Frazier being one that's already done it. Chance Adams and Andor obviously are a little bit more on the unknown side, but have great prospects. So, and they're both in AAA. Like, these guys are getting very close to ready to go. I just, I don't know. To me, it's like you're trying to get an embarrassment of riches in pitching, and the only way it makes any sense, and you're going to make a deal to fit the roster, because that's the other problem. You just named five starters. We talked about they have their guys back. Like, who's going to leave? So the only thing I can think of is that Jordan Montgomery is part of this deal, or he's flipped somewhere else for something else. And then what are we doing? Are we moving sideways? Because kind of, to me, that's what it is almost.
No, Gerrit Cole's better than Jordan Montgomery at this point. Who knows? Like people, okay. People are. I got into this on Twitter yesterday.
I know he's a good pitcher, and he's came a good off an pitcher. Injury.
He came off an injury, and he gave 31 home runs last year, which is really bad. I mean, that's Phil Hughes bad. And you go to Yankee Stadium, that might go up to 40 home runs. Who the hell knows?
And it's trended up, by the way. That's a new stat for him.
Right. But I made a comparison between Gerrit Cole and Sonny Gray, because if you look at their career trajectory, it's very similar. They each had Cy Young caliber seasons in 2015. I think Sonny Gray finished third in the American League that year, and Gerrit Cole finished fourth in the American League that year, in the National League that year for Cy Young voting. And then they've experienced some downswings and some injuries sprinkled into that as well. So you're trading for the Yankees traded for Sonny Gray because they think he's closer to the 2015 pitcher than he is the 2016 pitcher. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, but so you'd be doing the same thing for Gerrit Cole.
I understand that, but to me, when you're talking about the names that are involved in this trade, you're talking about guys that are much closer to being ready for the major leagues. The deal that got Sonny Gray, we dealt two injured guys and a dude that's in Double A who has been sporadic if best.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. The prospects the Yankees gave up for Sonny Gray were, let's be honest, not going to help the Yankees in the near future.
James Kaprielian, who was coming off of an injury, and who knows, I've been predicting ever since he was drafted that he's the next Mark Pryor with the way that he throws. I don't think he's going to have a long career. And just this most recent injury to me is just building on that. Jorge Mateo, who's been up and down. I mean, like this, he was like the top prospect for a long time. Had some
Fowler.
Issues.
Yeah, Fowler was the injury. I mean, Fowler, who knows, if he stayed healthy, he could have changed a lot, Fowler staying healthy, because Clint Frazier might have never been in the big leagues. And then if Fowler had a really good season, who knows? Maybe they don't trade for Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, but the thing is, when we're talking about those two deals, because I've heard yesterday I was watching something where they were talking about the package of these guys and saying it was very comparable. But yeah, to me, it's not, because you have Clint Frazier, who is, where is he ranked now? He's like top 10 or top 15?
Well, no, he's no longer a prospect.
Oh, right. That's right. So, but he was up there. He was one of the highest, you know, in the top tier of all prospects in Major League Baseball.
I think he was top 20 in Major League Baseball, and he was the Yankees' third overall prospect.
And I understand Kaprielian was up there as well, and Mateo is up there, but they were both Kaprielian coming off a major arm injury, mm-hmm. and then Fowler coming off an injury, and who the hell knows what Mateo is? I personally don't think he's going to be a major leaguer.
Higher risk. Those guys are high risk.
Yeah. So it's the deal to me is very different. So And with those numbers, if we're all so worried about the analytics and really focusing on the metrics of things and launch angle and the amount of home runs you're giving up, Gerrit Cole is not trending in the right direction. He's trending in a direction that's going to send a shit ton of fly balls out of Yankee Stadium, because he's all the other metric and stat that I saw was that a lot more guys are sitting on his fastball and pulling it. And that's bad news for Gerrit Cole, because that's a lot of home runs in Yankee Stadium.
One thing I do like about Cole's 2017, though, is he pitched 203 innings coming off an elbow issue in 2016. So maybe he's durable. He pitched 208 innings in 2015 when he received Cy Young votes, and then 203 innings in 2017. The Yankees didn't have a 200-inning pitcher last year. Severino didn't reach 200 innings, correct?
I don't remember how many innings exactly he had.
I'm looking it up. So, but 200 innings is... Yeah, Severino 193.
Okay, so for all intents and purposes, just like Tanaka did 2 years ago.
Okay, but 200 innings, especially in today's game, where the Yankees are trying to get to that bullpen as soon as there's a sign of trouble, that's good. So yeah, you're right. The fly ball trend, not good for Cole. But if he's healthy, he can fix that.
But let me ask you a question, because I feel like that was almost a contradictory statement, in the sense that does the 200 innings matter as much now because they are going to the bullpen so fast?
No. My point with the 200 innings is I don't think he's injured.
Yeah, I know. That's fine. So then why is he not performing up to his
peak. I don't know. You, I mean,
maybe it takes a year to get back. I don't know.
Who knows? Maybe his stuff. Maybe there wasn't as much life on his fastball coming off an injury. Or I don't know. I didn't watch Garrett. Guess how many Garrett Cole starts I watched last year?
Zero. 100% zero.
Big fat zero. I don't know.
Look, Garrett Cole is a player. I like Garrett Cole as a player. I think that this would be one of Cashman's deals where he's looking at what he thinks he is and not what he is right now. I think they think he's on the upswing. I'm hearing people on MLB Network, I watch that quite a bit while I'm up here, have been talking about Garrett Cole like on the level of the top flight pitchers in the National League for next year, like conversation in the Cy Young. They think he's going to take that next step. Like, he is that top flight guy. He's that top flight potential. So I understand why the Yankees are trying to go after him. I just don't like the package right now for what's going on with the roster. To me, you're not getting the value because you're going to have to give up somebody else. Someone's going to have to give up their spot in that rotation. They're not going to go to a six-man rotation. That's, I feel like that conversation is had every year, and it dies in a blaze of glory every single time because it never happens.
Well, they've also never had six starters that are worth having a six-man rotation for. If they acquired Garrett Cole and did not give up Jordan Montgomery, which I don't think they would because we have not seen Jordan Montgomery's name at all reported as being part of any trade.
That's
package.
What leads me to believe that maybe he is part of it because Cashman is not leaking anything real.
I agree with you, though.
He's going to go to AAA then. He's going to be in AAA.
Or if right? they did, well, but what my point was that the reason a six-man rotation has never really happened is because you have four or five starters, and then the sixth one is like, do we really want to give this guy a start? But if they had all of the five guys plus Garrett Cole, you could make an argument all six of those guys are worthy of getting a start.
So, I guess.
But you're right. I do think they – and I feel bad because we're talking about an email we got from our guy Lee Jones in Liverpool, England. So let me just read that quickly. It's been said that Green will enter spring training as a starter, yet the Cole, Fulmer, Corbin rumors persist. Do you think there's any chance that we're contemplating a six-man rotation? It was speculated when pursuing Otani. Perhaps they have decided to forge ahead, especially as it would solve a problem if someone were to go on the DL at some point by reverting to a five instead of having to stretch someone out midseason. That's an interesting point that Lee made at the end there, too.
Yeah, you know, it's... You're just messing around with people's routines as well. And we know these guys are creatures of habits. They've been going on 5 days for how long? 5 days rest. Like, that's what they do. You start throwing different things in there, then you start talking about routines that are different. You start talking about, and I know they're professionals and they should be able to adapt to this because they're professionals that are getting paid millions of dollars to do it. But at the same time, that throw that out the window because all we care about is their performance. And usually when a guy is performing at his best, he's in a good routine. He's doing what he knows how to do. He's got confidence. And to me, you're disrupting that with something like this. I don't think they're going to go with a six-man rotation. I feel like that's just... They've shaken up a lot of things in this this offseason. Them going to a six-man rotation for Aaron Boone's first time ever managing,
yeah,
that would be a doozy.
Yeah, the binder's out the window. The binder is burned, my friend. Aaron Boone's coming in here. It's analytics baseball at this point. Cashman and his nerds are thinking up stuff that we can't even dream of, and maybe a six-man rotation is one of those things.
Next thing we know, Brian Kenny is going to be in the front office on the Sabermetrics, the newly formed Sabermetrics team, and these guys are no longer starters, but they're openers.
Well, that's the thing. If Chad Green comes in as a starter, but he only goes four innings, is he a starter or an opener?
I don't know, but Brian Kenny is definitely like, you know, has got some little schoolgirl laugh going on in the background as that happens.
We
got
to get Kenny back on the podcast to discuss.
Definitely. So I don't know. I don't really understand like this whole thing. I think what Cashman is doing at this point is he is just trying to play them back into his own hands. And, you know, I don't really take a lot of stock in the rumors of who the guys are because I do feel like that could change. I do believe that Clint Frazier is the centerpiece. There's going to be a big name as a centerpiece. There's no doubt. Yeah. And I think Frazier makes the most sense of that to be that guy.
It's unfortunate because I don't want them to trade Clint Frazier for a number of different reasons. I love his intensity. I thought what he brought to the table last year when he got his chance, he was exposed at the plate in certain situations. He was swinging at too much stuff. He was overmatched. But he played his friggin' ass off. And I loved that. I don't want to get too far down the road with Frazier, but that kind of intensity reminded me of what O'Neill had. Not saying that he's going to turn into O'Neill and the team leader that O'Neill was, but you kind of, it's a nice balance to have on a team where you got your even keeled guys like Derek Jeter and David Cone and all those guys to sort of keep the ship on the level. But then you got O'Neal coming over the top where he just wants to win and he'll do anything at any cost. And I sort of saw some of that in Frazier last year. And you got your Aaron Judge and you got your Gary Sanchez and your Greg Bird. These guys, it's going to be the core going forward. They're raised the Yankee way. They're not going to say anything to rock the boat, all that kind of stuff. And then Clint Frazier's coming in here with the red hair and he's sort of like blazing out there. And you kind of like that on the team.
Well, I think also when you're looking at it from a fan perspective, I think the fan who the Yankees fan, usually the ones that are talking or that are listening to the show and just like really into it, are very passionate and emotional about their team. And we all go through a roller coaster where the Yankees are doing well. We're like, it's euphoria. It's like the greatest thing ever. And then when they're not doing well, it's like, they're the worst. You're cursing everybody out. You're pissed off. And you kind of relate to a guy like Clint Frazier who wears his emotions on his sleeve as that emotional guy. And I think that's why people really embraced Paul O'Neill, because he didn't care. Like like a fan does with emotion swings. Like you saw that on the field. And like, that's how I would feel if I was out there. So you almost relate to a guy like that on a fan side, because he is showing his true emotion rather than just kind of hiding behind the Yankee culture.
Yeah. And you can't have 25 guys like that, because your team will implode by the end of May. But if you have one out of 25 or two out of 25, I think that's actually is really good for a clubhouse.
Yeah. It adds some fun to it too, for us to watch.
Another thing about Sonny Gray, it's also a conversation I had on Twitter yesterday, was people are acting like Sonny Gray is a bum. And I know he came over and had a rough September, but he was one of the best starters in the American League from June, when he was still with Oakland, through the month of August when he was with the Yankees. His win-loss record didn't show it, because there were some times the Yankees and Oakland didn't score jack shit for him. Hopefully that's not going to be an issue next year. We think the Yankees offense is going to be okay in 2018. So hopefully he gets some run support and he doesn't try and be too perfect where he was nibbling and he can attack hitters, because obviously his stuff is good enough to get hitters out. But I put out a Twitter poll question. Would you be surprised if Sonny Gray is the best Yankees starter in 2018?
No, not at all. I mean, he's got top of the rotation caliber stuff. Like, this is, you look at the rotation, you break it down, and you look at where they would be on another team. You look at Tanaka, Severino, and Gray. Those are three number one pitchers. 100%. Those would be guys that would lead a rotation on another team. Tanaka obviously had the very tough first half, but when he settled in, I mean, he showed what he could do. He showed the type of consistent guy that he is. We saw Severino break out last year, and then I think he gets Sonny Gray gets hidden a little bit, because he was in California for the beginning of his career, and a lot of people don't know much about him because it's just an unknown, and they play games so damn late that nobody really has watched him pitch unless he's been on the East Coast. But he is a very, very, very good pitcher. He's got a ridiculous repertoire, probably the best group of pitches of all those guys. Like the repertoire that he has on the mound and that he can command, and when he's on, is filthy, unbelievably filthy. I'd say him and Tanaka probably have the best group of pitches. When they're on, they're practically impossible to hit.
They're not the most dominant. They don't have the 98 mile an hour fastball that Severino has. But you're right. They have four, sometimes five different pitches.
Yeah, and you don't know what's coming. I remember that quote from David Ortiz talking about Sonny Gray, and he saw him coming out as this little kid that would fix his iPhone at an Apple store. That's, I think, what he referred to him as. And he made him look like an idiot in the box because he had no idea what was coming. And the way that he throws with his arm slots and the way that he disguises his pitches, he's very tough to hit. When he's on, he's on. So, no, I don't know why people are shit. It's similar to the syndrome that was happening at the beginning of last year, towards the end of the 2016 year, where people were shitting on Didi and Starlin Castro because there were all these other guys that they were looking at. And I think that's kind of the other thing. People see other people and they forget about what's really good also on their team.
It's what have you done for me lately? And Sonny Gray had a bad September. He was okay in the playoffs, but he was probably...
But he wasn't trusted.
He was their fourth starter in the playoffs. He was their worst starter in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's saying a lot. I mean, that's saying a lot. And
well, because
you could tell that he wasn't, he didn't have the confidence of the coaching staff either. Like the way that they
bitching because we felt like he was nibbling.
Yeah, and this is a guy that has gone out there and done well in the postseason before with Oakland. He's had some very good starts, so he's got that competitor nature. He's got has a proven track record. So I would not be surprised if he came out and was the best starter next year. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Exactly. So I guess I don't understand why some fans are acting otherwise, but that's another reason why the Yankees don't need Gerrit Cole. But if you did trade for Gerrit Cole, he could also be the Yankees' best starter in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, we're just talking about an embarrassment of riches at that point. I just don't know what we're doing with all those guys. And I get everybody's
like, they're trying to win a freaking World Series.
I know, but everybody's like, you know, there's depth. Like, you can never have too much starting pitching. I totally understand that. But to what extent are we doing that? Because if we are doing that, then Jordan Montgomery, I don't know where he's going to be. CeCe's definitely on the team. He's got a deal. He's going to pitch. Where's Jordan Montgomery going? Is he going to be in AAA? Are they going to put him in the bullpen? What are they doing with him? Then we're talking about a guy who's in AAA that doesn't, he 100% doesn't belong in AAA. He's a major league pitcher, and he's just down there because there's not a spot for him. And I don't know. That's just a weird situation to be in. It's not good for player development. It's not good for the relationship with the player and the club, in my opinion. There's just a number of things that are strange there. So I'm interested to see how it unfolds. But I see what Cashman's doing. He's trying to acquire talent, right? To acquire talent and on the pitching side. So if he could do that with a deal that he's comfortable with, I've said all along, I trust everything that he does right now. The guy can do no wrong. So if he sees it as a move that he makes and it's good for the club, I'm in. You know, if it's Clint Frazier, the one thing you and I were talking about and Rich in the back and RJ in one of our group chats is that there are some other guys that are raising up. Florial was rumored to be part of that deal. That's another one that they apparently have dismissed because he's practically untouchable. But another guy that came over from in the Cubs deal for Chapman was Billy McKinney, who has now started to play more. He's playing outfield. He's an outfielder, and he's also starting to play some first base. He's raking right now. He's in the fall league. He's raking. This is a guy that was a top 100 prospect. I think he was a top 50 prospect in the Cubs system. He came over. He started with the A's. I think he went over to the Cubs in the Addison Russell deal, and the dude can rake. I mean, absolutely rake. He's been hurt. He's fully healthy. You saw him coming on at the end of last year. And I think that's a guy to watch. I think the Yankees really like him. And maybe that's making Cashman feel a little bit better about trading Frazier if it's part of the deal.
Absolutely. Because Brett Gardner's up at the end of next year. And maybe he re-signs for like a one-year deal or short-term deal with the Yankees and you keep him in left field. But he's getting old. You're going to need a left fielder. So that's why people are saying Clint Frazier is the left fielder of the future. Maybe it's Billy McKinney, maybe it's Florial, maybe it's someone that we don't even know. But that's why I think giving up Clint Frazier is extra hard to handle because we see a clear spot for him. Maybe not in 2018, but definitely 2019.
Well, the other thing is, though, because if you look at what's going to happen in the Yankees outfield this year, too, I mean, some people might debate that point because maybe everybody's thinking that Aaron Hicks is the center fielder of the future, which I have a hard time believing. But
he's the center fielder of the near future.
Of the near future. But if he is that guy that they think is going to take that job and be that guy, then you have a center fielder, right? Then you have two giants that are going to flank him, basically, because one of them will, Judge or Stanton, if we're looking at this, and if Gardner is not re-signed, one of them most likely is going to go to left field permanently. And the way that Aaron Boone's been talking about it, kind of with the media and just answering questions about what they're going to do on defense, it seems like he's going to kind of throw both of them in left field at some points and see who's comfortable. And he's really not going to have a set plan, just kind of go with it. He's already talked about if there's a tough lefty on the mound that he wants to get both those guys in. So someone's going to have to play if you're stacking that DH spot with a righty as well. So there's going to be a lot of interesting things that come up. So, you know, it's not 100% a clear path that Frazier has that left field job either.
Absolutely. And these are all just speculating rumors at this point with Gerrit Cole. We're recording this Saturday morning. So who knows? Christmas Eve night. This is something Cashman would do Christmas Eve night at like 9:30 PM. He drops a Gerrit Cole trade just to throw a wrench in everyone's Christmas Eve dinner.
If he does do that, I will come on and give some 2 cents, and I'll try to steal you away too.
Yeah, I'll go out in the backyard and make a phone call to you.
There you go.
The Yankees, though, aren't just linked to Gerrit Cole as far as starting pitchers. Patrick Corbin from Arizona, who's a lefty with one more year of control. He had a up and down 2017. He made 32 starts, which is good. 4.03 ERA overall. Not that great, especially for Arizona, big pitcher's ballpark. But he was pretty good in the second half with a 3.26 ERA. He's someone they could acquire who is depth, who would not cost Clint Frazier plus prospects. He would, I don't know what he would cost, something much less than that package. But if you're acquiring someone like Corbin, it brings it back again to, is Patrick Corbin better than Jordan Montgomery?
That's the problem. I don't understand why there's so many rumors about these other guys that are out there. Maybe it's just floating out there to give them even more leverage because they're talking to other clubs. I don't know. But that makes zero sense to me. You have Jordan Montgomery ready to go. I understand if you're trying to acquire a guy that's like a top-tier guy that has the potential of being a number one in Gerrit Cole. I get that. I understand it. It's value. That's what Cashman lives on. He lives on value. Patrick Corbin, not bringing me value. I don't know what we're doing with the starting rotation at that point. So I'm passing on Corbin. I'm passing on guys like, what's his name from Detroit? Fulmer. I don't. You're going to have to give up too much.
Did you hear the what Detroit was asking for Fulmer? Because also Fulmer's locked up for a long time. He's not even arbitrary. He was a rookie last year.
Yeah.
Their starting point was Clint Frazier and Gleyber Torres. That was their starting point. So
hip bricks. It's not happening. Like, there's not a deal that I want for a guy like that.
Go shove Michael Fulmer up your ass, Detroit.
Yeah. Detroit's funny. They're adorable with the way that they try to do things like that. It's like nobody takes them serious, I feel like, at this point.
No, but I mean they have to ask for the moon at this point because he's locked up for long term. And if they do want to trade him, maybe they go at the trade deadline and get somebody to overpay a contender. The problem with trading a pitcher at the deadline, if you're someone like Detroit or someone like Pittsburgh, is that, yeah, the price might go up, but you also limit yourselves to the teams that would want to acquire him because it's going to be someone who needs a starter and someone who's in contention. And maybe that goes from 10 teams in the offseason down to 3 teams. So you're not sort of getting them all to bid against one another. But you could also get a situation where the Yankees got 2 years ago, where they just flip 2 relievers for just gigantic hauls to teams that are desperate.
Let me tell you where I am at this point. Unless Brian Cashman goes out and gets ridiculous value that he chalks up as truly worth it, I really, really hope and think that the Yankees should stand pat because they still have a ridiculous farm system that has, you know, one of the strongest farm systems in the league and puts them in a position of strength that if they need to go out and acquire somebody, whether it's at the trade deadline or there have been deals, you know, within the month of July earlier and before the trade deadline really starts heating up, they have a position where they can go in and do it. And then they know what they have more in the starting rotation. They know what they have on the field a bit more. So I really hope that they can hold those cards for a point where, hey, maybe now we can go and get somebody that pushes us over the edge and we have a better idea of what exactly we need. So that's what I'm hoping happens. Unless they can steal Gerrit Cole somehow, that's kind of what I hope happens.
Yeah, the only way I see them stealing Cole is if it gets to a point closer to spring training and Pittsburgh's like, well, no one's making offers here, so let's just take the Yankees' best offer. But
which leads me to, like, why are you doing that? Like, why are you doing this?
Well, I think they're going to trade him by the end of 2018 because if they trade him in 2019, his value goes down because then he's in his last year of control.
Oh, so, definitely. And they're in a rebuild mode at this point. I mean, they should be at least.
Yeah. So this is, they're going to trade him in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I'm saying the price for them, they'll be getting a bigger haul. The price goes up when you start going into the season. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It does. People are looking to move.
But you run the risk of Cole having a bad first half.
Yeah, you do. But I don't know. To me, if he pitched 200 innings, like you said, then you're kind of banking on the fact that he would be healthy. So I don't know, man. We'll see. There's a lot of interesting things happening.
Yeah, and the Yankees also apparently made some calls to Yu Darvish's agent. I don't get that at all.
Well, I mean, he's prospect free, so if they're going to add somebody, if they're dead set on adding a guy, which I, you know, then
no, I'd rather them
pay for it.
No, I'd rather them trade for Gerrit Cole than sign Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish is 31 years old. He's coming off Tommy John surgery. Absolutely shit his pants in the World Series. No thanks, Yu Darvish. We already have Tanaka. I don't need Yu Darvish too.
You don't want 2 Japanese starters on the team?
No, it's going to piss me off too much. Not that there's anything wrong with Japanese starters. It's just, I've been known to get angry at them.
The Yu Darvish, like, they would just have to overpay. It would be entirely too much. Unless Yu Darvish is taking a smaller deal, which makes no sense.
No, makes no sense. Yeah.
Then okay. But
But like, all we've heard is got to get under the tax threshold. Got to get under the tax threshold. And maybe they could still sign him and get under the tax threshold if they.
I still think they could. Yeah.
If they offload Ellsbury, because they're at like $150 something million right now. But then you're really, because Darvish is going to cost $20 million, $20 to $25 million. So you're really putting yourself up against that 197, where you might not be able to add pieces in the season if you need to.
Yeah, I don't want Darvish.
Me neither. Easy. Cashman, we don't want him. Other reports that the Yankees and Todd Frazier have been talking about a contract that would be something like a 1 year with a player option, where that gives Todd Frazier some flexibility to opt out if the Yankees decide they want to sign Manny Machado or they want to promote Andujar or something crazy happens at third base. And I think that makes a ton of sense for both the Yankees and for Todd Frazier, because yeah. Frazier stays with the Yankees. He loved New York, Tom's River, blah, blah, blah. The Yes Network can get even more mileage out of the fact they can show the map. Oh, look, it took him 2.5 hours to get to the office today because there was some traffic on the GW Bridge. Ha, ha, ha. But Todd Frazier was a fan favorite. You and I even bought into it in the playoffs. He was one of the first guys out of the dugout every time the Yankees made a rally. He's good, solid third base on defense. He's going to pop like 25 home runs. I averaged out his stats from 2017 with the Yankees. If it was over an entire season, he would have had 25 home runs, 73 RBIs, and 80 walks with good defense as a 7, 8, or 9 hitter. That's very good value, I think, for Todd Frazier.
Yeah, and this is the deal that we've talked about for a while. I think it makes a lot of sense if he's not getting what he wants in a longer deal, if he's not seeing the numbers that he wants to see, then it makes a lot of sense for him as a professional and thinking about another contract to take a 1 year deal, maybe with a player option, and showing up and putting up some good numbers so that he can go out and you know get that one more longer contract. Because what is he? We talked about his age. I forget. It was 31, 32, something like that.
Yeah.
So he's got one more contract in him, maybe a 3 year deal somewhere in there. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And if you're looking for a good place to play to put up good numbers, pretty good spot in New York.
Yeah. I'm thinking something like 1 year, $12 million contract or $13 million contract with a player option for like $10
million. Yeah. That's, I don't think it would be as high as 13 personally, but it's right around 10.
Well, I think you're going to have to bump up the yearly value just by a million or two just to get him to sign a short-term contract. Which
yeah, that's possible.
Whatever. It's $1 million. It's still going to work in the scheme of the tax threshold they're trying to do.
And that's all that matters, honestly. Those couple million here and there, you know, throw around a couple million, no problems. But when we're talking about the tax threshold, when we're talking about the tax threshold, all that matters is that you get under it. So the money underneath it doesn't matter.
Could Frazier be sort of like a Scott Brosius to the Yankees, just more power, a little bit less contact, but that really solid defender, bottom of the order hitter, good clubhouse kind of guy?
I think Brosius was a better contact hitter.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, but a much better contact hitter, and like not even close. Did Brosius win a batting title at one point?
No, but
He came close to one.
But he didn't come close to 25 home runs.
No, it's a different world today. But the comparison lives with a defense, solid guy. I think Frazier brings a little bit more. I think he's more of a jovial, fun guy that brings people together. I just like the dude personally. So it's a part of that is my bias saying I just want that guy on my team because he's a good guy. And I think that does mean a lot when you're talking about a team that's ready for contention. You need those very good guys to keep the clubhouse loose and to keep him going when bad things are happening. So I think he just fits really well with what this team is.
Scott Brosius played 4 seasons for the Yankees. What would you guess his batting average was with the Yankees?
Oh, I'm going to be way off now, I feel like, with the way you're asking this question. 279.
267.
Okay.
And Frazier was a 222 hitter last year.
Yeah, that's a solid difference.
No, it's absolutely a solid difference. But you get 225 out of Frazier with 25 home runs, I'm signing up for that.
And I actually think he's better than 225. So I think that...
Well, because he walks. He gets on base.
He gets on base. And that's big when you're starting to talk about turning that lineup over. That's important.
Yeah. There's also been some talk of could Mike Moustakas be a fit for the Yankees at third base if his market comes down? I think it would have to come way down. I thought Moustakas was going to get like a 4 or 5 year deal this offseason. And now since I guess the market has not shown that's out there for someone like Moustakas, and he might even sign go 1 or 2 year contract because he just doesn't have that longer term thing out there. Moustakas is a left-handed hitter, which I think is the only sort of positive I see with him. I guess he's a better player than Frazier overall, but you're going to be paying more, and I think you're going to be paying more in years. And I just rather give myself the flexibility of someone else at third base down the road than locking in Moustakas at third base for the next 3 seasons.
Well, see, I think the only way that it makes sense for the Yankees is that if he doesn't do that long-term deal. I think that's the big thing why Moustakas' name has been floated to the Yankees. It's similar to, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but what Ian Desmond did a few years ago, he turned down that giant contract from the Nationals when he was on the team because he wanted to test free agency. And when he did, everybody's like, there was crickets, nobody wanted him. He wasn't getting a long-term deal. Ended up signing a one-year deal, I think with Texas or I don't know, where did he end up? Or in the desert somewhere. Did a one-year deal and then turned that into another contract. So that's to me what we're looking at. Similar to what Frazier would do if he signed with the Yankees, you're going to get a one-year deal, maybe a one-year with an option at third base, whether it's Frazier or like a guy like Moustakas. But that Moustakas would only work if he agreed that I'm doing this for 1 year to play for another contract. Because he's a good player. He's a better player than Frazier. He's a lockdown defender as well. He's got more pop. He's a better fit for this lineup. But it would only work on a one-year deal. They're not going to sign him long-term.
Someone's giving him 3+. I guarantee Probably. You someone's giving him 3+.
But the difference is it's got to be the money he wants too. It's got to be the money. If he's not going to take a hit on the money just to sign that 3-year deal. I think this is a guy that can go out there definitely. He's young enough still.
He'd put up numbers in Yankee Stadium too. That's one
He would
thing.
Put up huge numbers in Yankee Stadium.
It would be so, like a Nelly Cruz situation, yes, with Baltimore, where he goes and just like mashes in Camden Yards and then, yes, signs the big contract with Seattle. Moustakas could come over, mash in the Bronx, and then sign a big contract with somebody.
Absolutely. And I think Moustakas has kind of flown under the radar, part of that team. You know, everybody talks about the Royals team, but not very many people individualize those guys, right? They were the epitome of a team when they were winning. And Moustakas, I think, has just kind of like, you know, blended into the fibers of Kansas City rather than being a standout guy. I think if he came to New York on a one-year deal, if that did make sense for him, if he wasn't getting the money he wanted, that he would definitely stand out and put up some monster numbers.
And let's be honest, you're going to convince somebody that you're going to mash in this lineup.
It's a good situation. Look, if he's not getting the money, it's a great situation for him. The Yankees are in such a power position right now where they can absolutely attract a guy like that for a one-year deal, saying like a number of things. One, you come into a ridiculous lineup. You're going to get a ridiculous amount of pitches. You could mash here, put up huge numbers, make yourself even more attractive on the market, and you have an opportunity to win a World Series. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what everybody wants, right? That's what everybody wants. They want a big money and to win. It's a good situation. If you believe in yourself and you believe that you're going to put up those numbers, it's a bet. You know, you're betting on yourself basically to put up those numbers to stay healthy and get that long-term deal in the next free agent period.
We're talking about these free agents like Moustakas, Frazier, and Yu Darvish. And I still think if the Yankees sign another free agent to some big-ish money, it means Ellsbury's got to be gone. Heyman speculated this week that the Giants would be a perfect fit for Jacoby Ellsbury because they need outfielders. They just traded Denard Span to Tampa for Evan Longoria. More on Longoria in a minute. But the Yankees are going to have to eat some of that Ellsbury contract. But if you're the Giants and say the Yankees eat 50% of the contract, okay, you're paying $11 million a year for Jacoby Ellsbury. You're banking on the fact that he's going to give you solid defense, top of the order speed, and maybe, just maybe, he's got some cojones and he's pissed off and he might want to prove something that he's not just a bench player, which is what he is with the Yankees.
No.
No, he's... Come on, that's the pitch. That's the pitch. And elite catcher's interference player.
Oh, that's 100% elite. Best all time. You want the best catcher's interference player in the history of baseball? Jacoby Ellsbury is your guy. He wants to go back to the Pacific Northwest where he can just chill out. I mean, like, he's from the Oregon. So this is a guy that wants to go back home.
Okay, it's a
nice little fit for him so that he can just kind of chill. Look, I made a pitch. I don't know if you saw my tweet on Bronx Pinstripes.
I did.
But I tried to pitch him. You know, I don't know if the Giants bought it. Hopefully they did. But, you know, people are more laid back in California. Fits his style more. He doesn't seem like he cares all that much. So I think it would be a nice little fit.
Well, do you think he'd waive his no-trade clause? Because that's the big problem.
To go to San Francisco?
I can't freaking believe the Yankees gave him a no-trade clause.
I mean, they gave him the contract they did, so it shouldn't surprise you that the rest of it was built up. I don't know why you're Jacoby Ellsbury and you have an opportunity to go to San Francisco to start. Why the hell would you not waive it? I don't get it. You're just going to sit here and be the ass that everybody wants gone?
Yeah, bitter. The whole time? Maybe he's bitter.
Well, then he's just going to get more bitter because people are going to shit on him all year long. Like, all year.
He could be a guy who's just like, hey, I'm going to sit on my ass and get paid $21.14 million a year to play 65 times.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to do that. What professional athlete wants to go and just sit somewhere?
Maybe he's done. Maybe he's just mentally done.
Well, go back home then. Go to California. Avoid the New York tri-state, you know, all the craziness that's around there. Go to California and just relax. Relax. That's fine. You'll be closer to home. It'll be a lot better. It makes no sense to me why he wouldn't waive that if there was a deal in place with San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco's out there in the market for some free agent guys too, like Jay Bruce. But they might find those guys are very expensive. Like Jay Bruce is probably looking for $20 million a year or something like that. And who knows? Maybe the Yankees have to eat more than 50% of the contract. But it's addition by subtraction. You clear a roster spot and you clear some payroll.
They took on a lot of money with this Longoria deal as well. So you could tell that the Giants are making a move right now for 2018. Like this is the year that they're trying to go out. It's an even year.
Their window's closing.
They're trying to win this. They have a number one guy at the top of their rotation. They know that. Didn't they, what's his face, Stade, right?
Cueto Stade. They have Bumgarner, who's, like you said, number one. You got Cueto and you got Samardzija. And you've got a Hall of Fame catcher.
Hall of Fame catcher who changes the rules of baseball. This is the team that's ready to go. So, yeah, why not add another a guy like Ellsbury who can get on base? They need an outfielder. Didn't they just trade Denard Span?
Yeah, Denard Span. Like I said, he was their starting center fielder. They have Hunter Pence, but other than that,
he's a corner outfielder.
Right, but they don't have guys with a lot of major league experience. And they'd be going into next season with a hole in center and in left field.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great deal. Go, Jacoby. Go.
Maybe you can't because you're preoccupied up in Boston, but I would actually drive Ellsbury, not across country because that's a lot. I would get him an Uber to JFK.
Ooh, that's an expensive Uber.
Well, maybe I could crowdsource it.
You could get that money very fast. If that was a shared Uber ride between
people. He's Uber pool. No, not even. He's Lyft sharing it. Whatever that thing is called, Lyft line.
We could do an Uber pool, and all of us could go with him and just send him off. Make sure that he gets on the damn plane. We need to send some people to make sure that he gets on the plane.
You know what I realized though is that now that Chase Headley's gone, Ellsbury is the new number one.
You're running out of guys. No, yeah, but he's too easy. He's too easy.
Yeah, but that's why. I mean, and it's going to be for everyone because the rest of the team is very likable, even the guys that are making big money. Tanaka's the second highest earner on the team. As long as he's out there pitching well, who gives a shit? But Ellsbury is the guy who's just eating up contract on the bench. So he is public enemy number one in the Bronx next year.
Let me tell you what I'm afraid of, because I don't even think Ellsbury's going to get as much just because everybody knows it. It's like you're beating a guy who's already so far down that it doesn't matter anymore. What's making me nervous is that now that Chase Headley's gone and we really don't have like that guy that plays every day to go after, I'm really, really nervous about the frustration level on Gary Sanchez's defense. I really pray to God that he fixes it and cleans it up, because if he doesn't clean it up, I'm going to go absolutely ape shit next year, because it's going to be the only thing I'm going to be able to complain about. One of the only things, and it's going to be so glaring.
Well, let's hope that's one of the only things that we have to complain about.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm going to build this animosity up towards him if he doesn't clean that up.
Because
there's nothing else to complain
about. Because we see the potential in him. Like Ellsbury's a lost cause. Like he goes out there and strikes out four times. Like whatever, he's Jacoby Ellsbury. We know that. But Gary Sanchez, we think, is an all world, all star level player. So to see him be lazy behind the plate, that pisses you off even more.
Oh, no doubt. And the fact that he can do better. I know he can do better. Yeah. I have confidence that Gary Sanchez is going to clean that shit up in this offseason, going to come back and going to be a much better defender. He's already got the plus arm. I'm very excited for that. I'm just saying, I don't want to be frustrated. I don't want to be that guy. I do not want to be. I don't want to be you, okay? I don't want to be that negative guy. I'm sorry, I don't.
So
someone's got to bring positivity on a weekly basis.
We have to have a yin and a yang on this podcast. We can't have two negative people.
No.
Though, but back to Ellsbury, people don't even care. I sort of just was daydreaming about something. He walks to the plate, and then the PA announcer, instead of playing his walk-up music, just plays cricket noises, and the entire stadium is quiet. That would be even worse than him just getting booed.
Hilarious. That would be funny. A quick note on the Moustakas thing before we move on to, I was just thinking about this a little bit further in my brain, and it's making even more sense. If he's not getting the money that he wants to get this offseason, one, we're seeing a lot of free agents right now that are still out there, like a ton, like a lot. I thought I heard a number of like 150 free agents, something like that. There's a lot of free agents still out there right now. If Moustakas were to not see the numbers that he wants, if he were to go to a team like New York in a place where he can succeed, put up a monster year, all the money that is being saved, basically, that's being kind of stored and kept in escrow, if you will, for that 2019 class, how many teams are not going to get Manny Machado? How many teams are not going to go out there and get Bryce Harper and still have a ton of money to go out and spend? It's kind of a good time, even if you're not the number one guy, you could be the number two or even three guy out there to say, hey, I'm here, put up a monster number and really cash in, because there's going to be a lot of spenders in 2019.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. But Moustakas has to bet on himself in that situation.
100%. It's a gamble, but it could really pay off.
There's a lot of free agents out there, but usually the dominoes fall pretty quickly. Like JD Martinez is probably the top offensive free agent out there. The Red Sox seem to be the leading candidate for him, although they've been quiet this offseason. They just signed Mitch Moreland. Woohoo!
Big deal. That was a huge deal. Lock down that first base job.
But Martinez has not signed yet. So I feel like maybe once Martinez signs, sets the market. Like Scott Boras called him, what do you call him? The King Kong of Dong.
That's a ridiculous name.
Once Martinez signs, like for $150, $175 million, that sort of sets the market, then the next dominoes will fall.
Yeah, usually they wait for that big dude to go. I think people were waiting for a long time for the Ohtani thing to figure itself out. Now that has figured it out, we got the holidays. Usually this is a very dead time. Usually, honestly, like over the past couple of years when we've been podcasting in January is like total crickets, like nothing happens, but yeah. It's been a delayed year this year, so more things will definitely happen in January, which I appreciate. Thank you, Major League Baseball free agency, for stretching this out a little bit.
Yeah, January is always the calm before the storm, because then once you make it to February, you get pitchers and catchers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
One quick final thank you to the Giants for trading for Evan Longoria and getting him the hell out of the AL East. Woo! That's a weight off our shoulders, because Longoria is, now that Ortiz was retired, the number one Yankee killer.
All I got to say, man, is that if the Yankees aren't walking out with, like, usually the American League East, we play them, what, 19 times in a season? Like, I'm talking about, I want 17 wins. I'm serious. I want to go 17-2 if it's 19 games, however many you get. They should be winning practically every game against Tampa Bay.
And against the Orioles, because the Orioles are looking to trade Machado, and Britton is just out.
Yeah, he's coming back though. I think he'll be okay for spring training, or for the year maybe. I don't know. He'll be back earlier in the year. I don't think they're trading Machado until the trade deadline. I think they will get he will be a mercenary next year at some point. If they realize that they cannot re-sign him, they're stupid if they don't. They probably should have signed him last year so that someone else had control of him for a full year, but they didn't because the Orioles are dumb. But yeah, they're a better team, so they're still okay. I mean, they can still make a move. If they were to go out and get another pitcher, like, I don't understand why they're not going after a guy like Yu Darvish. Like, their window is still open. They still have a relatively open window.
They're looking up what the Yankees just did and what the Red Sox have set up on their – I mean –
This is their last year. This is their last year they can make a deal.
Okay, so then you wouldn't. But then you wouldn't. You wouldn't sign Yu Darvish, because you're locking him in for the long term. When you might suck, why aren't they in on a guy like Garrett Cole? Is the question. Maybe they don't have the prospects to get Garrett Cole.
They don't have the prospects.
But they could empty their farm system and just say we're gonna shot in the dark here. Let's see what happens. And there's wild card spots, right? They were a wild card team 2 years ago. Maybe if they get a pitcher, they could be a wild card team again.
I mean, they're going to be a very good offensive team. Absolutely. They're going to be one of the
always a good
teams.
Offensive team.
Because they play in Camden Yards, which is just a box of home runs. But their pitching has been, they just can't turn that corner. And I don't get it why they don't try. Why not? How about a reunion with Jake Arrieta? Nice little reunion, even though he sucked when he was with Baltimore.
Yeah. You ready to get into some mailbags?
Let's do it.
First one is a Twitter question from Greg Bill at Legit Greg Hill on Twitter. So maybe I copied that wrong and his name is Greg Hill, not Greg Bill. Anyway,
that would make sense.
He asks, who hits 2, 3, 4, and 5 in this lineup? I'd go Judge, Stanton, Bird, Sanchez, unless it's a lefty, and then I'll crack in at 5. Okay, so let's sort of try and construct the lineup, at least the top of the order. Why don't you go first?
Okay, I think Judge is going to slide in that second role. Again, we're assuming that Gardner's in the one spot. Gardner's in the one spot. I do think that Judge is going to stay in that two spot. I think that, you know, you have so many of these power guys that it really doesn't matter who's there. Someone's got to be there. But unless you're going two lefties and you put Didi. Personally, I love Didi as a two-hitter. Like, I think he's a great two-hitter. I think because he can now hit lefties, he can hit righties. The problem is that you would then stacking lefties at the top, and a lot of people don't like that. So if it's a right-handed bat, if it's a right-handed pitcher, I mean, I love it. I think Didi's a great two spot. I think he gets on base enough. I think he's hitting for average. He doesn't take as many walks as you'd like to see maybe, but he's getting on base a lot higher tick. But I think Judge is going to be that guy. And then I think it's just lefty righty after that. And you can kind of, I don't think it really matters as much. I think it would be Judge. Then I'd like to see Bird. Then Stanton and go on from there.
Yeah. Buster only wrote something a couple weeks back that what if the Yankees toyed with Aaron Judge leadoff? And he sort of cited that he sees a ton of pitchers because he walks a lot and he also strikes out a lot. So he sees a lot of pitches. He's a solid base runner. He's quick, especially for his size. And obviously he's got the power. So you got quick strike potential. It sort of reminds me of what happened with the Blue Jays and Joey Bats.
Yeah, I just don't think if Gardner's on this team, they're not going to mess around with that. I think that he's still going to be the leadoff guy. He's proved so well that he can do that and work the counts and take walks if he needs to and just grind out tough at bats. I think Gardner's like the prototypical guy. If he's healthy, he's going to be the leadoff guy.
I agree. I also think Gardner and then Judge at the top of the order is great. Bird, I think, has a three-hitter makeup, right?
Yeah.
But he's so goddamn slow. Like, so freaking slow. So you're going to have RBI guys behind him. He's going to clog the bases, whatever. I don't know if we really care about that. If they put Didi third, I'd be also totally fine with that. And then you have Stanton, and then you could go Bird Sanchez or Sanchez Bird behind him. It doesn't really matter where you're hitting a lot of these guys because they're all really good. People really want to see Judge and Stanton back-to-back in the order. But I actually would prefer them to be split up with a left-handed hitter or a guy that has a little bit more contact like Didi or Bird.
Yeah, and you know, I think that to me, just by, I don't know, using my gut and my intuition about how Boone is going to construct this lineup, I think it's going to change a lot. I think it's going to be very flexible. I don't think he's going to lock in guys at certain positions. I think that's what he really doesn't want to do. I think he wants to provide himself, and I think it'd behoove him to actually do that, to give himself some flexibility. But you know, I think there will be some guys that you'll see slowly lock into spots. Like I do think Gardner, and then I definitely think Judge will most likely, for all intents and purposes, lock in that too. But there's just so much flexibility with those other guys because, you know, when you're talking about Stanton, Bird and Sanchez, like those are three huge bopper, like guys that mash the living shit out of a ball. And then you throw Didi in there who hits 30 home runs and can hit more contact and can run a little better. There's just so many things you can do. So I really, it depends on who's on the mound.
Didi, you mentioned that he's got a high average, but he doesn't walk a lot. That's the next step for Didi. More patient at the plate.
Yeah, and don't you have confidence that that's going to come because he's shown the progression?
1,000,000%. And if Didi adds some patience to his approach at the plate and starts walking 70 times a year, holy shit, is he a complete player.
Well, you can look at that at two ways. The other side of that coin as well is if Didi is super aggressive, because that's probably the guy they're going to pitch to most, right? I mean, like, you're looking at these guys that can hurt you in all sorts of things. I think people do forget still that Didi's a 30 home run guy. Like, you know, when you look at him, like, that's not a 30 home run guy, but yeah, he actually is a 30 home run guy. He may get a lot more strikes, and, you know, it may actually benefit him more to be aggressive with those pitches because he's going to see a lot more strikes.
Yeah. He's a 30 home run guy. That's what he would have hit last year if he didn't miss April. He's a 30 home run guy at Yankee Stadium. I'm not sure he's a 30 home run guy everywhere, but he's a 20 right. home run guy everywhere. And he is an elite defensive player. And I don't know. We love Didi. Like, we just love Didi.
We love Didi. He's a phenomenal tweeter.
Yeah. All right. What's the next question?
All right. Next one is from Brent. He says, I'm as big a fan of all the moves Cashman has been doing, but don't you think we're putting too much trust in Bird, who missed almost the entire last season? I know he's a really good player, but what do the Yankees do if he does get injured? Romine at first? So it's interesting because I tend to agree with you in the sense that I think the Yankees do have to have some sort of a backup plan for Greg Bird, because he's proved that he can't stay on the field. And while, you know, some may argue that they've just been fluky injuries, that weird extra bone in his foot, like, what is that? I don't even know that was a thing. But he's had also back issues. And that, to me, is the more concerning part, is the more muscular issues, things that can linger longer, not a bone in the foot that's fluky and weird, but more the back stuff, you know, potentially other issues that can go along with a back injury, because back injuries just start the trend of other injuries when you compensate for things. So yeah, I think there does need to be a backup plan. I think it's a very solid concern.
I'm more worried about the fact that he can't stop posting pictures of his hairless cat.
Shit's weird, man. It's just strange.
I got an MLB at-bat update yesterday that Greg Bird was posting pictures of his cat. They were in matching Christmas sweaters.
Yeah, they did. There's the Lee Mazzilli's daughter is doing like updates. It's like a Talk Soup type Yankees style show on what they're doing on Twitter. It started yesterday. I don't know. Check it out if you want to. But they FaceTimed with Greg Bird and his hairless cat with matching sweaters. And you could tell that he's like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever done in my life.
No, I think
he's a corny dude. He's a corny dude.
He's clearly on the odds. He's eccentric.
And he's out there, yeah.
That's okay.
Maybe we should play the Ref Snyder interview, because Ref Snyder does talk about Bird and talks about a lot of the guys in the clubhouse and kind of their personalities.
Oh yeah, didn't he call Bird the corniest?
The corniest dude on the team. Horrible jokes, like horrible jokes.
Yes. As far as backup options at first base, that I think that's actually gives more of a reason that they could sign Todd Frazier. I know he didn't play first base for the Yankees last year, but they were toying around the idea of him as a backup first baseman. So if you sign Frazier, he can provide depth at first base. If Greg Bird goes down, then you could have Torres or someone else at third base. So I think Frazier at least gives you that option.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, Tyler Austin is still there. Also a guy, though, that hasn't proved that he can stay healthy.
Who?
Yeah, so he's probably going to come in as the backup first baseman, you would think. He does give that righty-lefty mix with Bird, which is good if you want to give
Tyler Bird. Austin finally got his chance to play first base last year and lasted three games before tearing a hamstring.
Yeah, it's bad. He can't stay, it's not a good situation for him as far as him staying on the field. He hasn't proved that he can stay healthy.
Did I say Tyler Wade? I meant Tyler Austin. I think I said Tyler
Whatever,
Wade.
One of the Tylers. He's definitely had opportunities that he has not been able to take advantage of.
Our 19th string first baseman just got traded to San Diego, Brian Mitchell.
Well, that's true. He did play first base at one point. We had like 80,000 first basemen last year, and they were all a disaster.
Is He-Man still around?
I think He-Man's in AAA. Maybe not. I don't know. Billy McKinney, though, the guy that we talked about earlier, has been picking up a first base glove. That's been new to him, so they're definitely working him out at first base. Also, keep an eye on him. I'm telling you, keep an eye on him. It's an interesting. He's an interesting player, and he does add flexibility to this team as far as position. And he can rake. The dude can hit.
We had already read the Lee Jones one about the 6-man rotation, and that's it for mailbags. Thank you guys for submitting. If you want to email us, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast. And we also have been getting our Facebook group going. It's something that Scott and I have been saying for like 2 years we got to get going, the Bronx Pinstripe Show Facebook. But you'll notice if you're a member of that, I posted a bunch of stuff last week, and I want to continue doing that. You can ask mailbag questions there too. That's sort of a forum discussion. So you guys can post some questions there. Follow me on Twitter at @Andrew_Rotondi. Follow Scott at @ScottReinen. Scott, any last words before we get out of here?
Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy Hanukkah. Hope everybody has a very happy and safe time over the holidays and has a good time with their family. Again, if you are interested in making an impact in children's heart defects disease research, Ethan Lindbergh Foundation does just phenomenal stuff. They've personally helped us out with an apartment. They have two apartments in Boston for people who are in the cardiac ICU long term, and they basically give it to everybody at a very reasonable rate. It's awesome. It definitely helps out quite a bit. And it's super comfortable. It's just it's a great thing to have. So if you're interested in supporting them and making a small donation, that would be amazing. Screenshot it, put something in there about the Yankees in the notes, go to their website, Ethan Lindbergh, LindbergH.com. And you just follow the links to their donation page. So again, Merry Christmas, happy holidays. And, hope everybody has a amazing, amazing Christmas.
Good stuff. Also, keep an eye out for those interviews we mentioned coming out later this week. And give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. That's what Scott and I want for Christmas from all you guys. Go do it. We're at 712 or 710. Just keep doing it till we get to 1,000 and more. So thanks, guys, for listening this entire year. Talk to you guys next week.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.